Hi, Marty Lurie here at KMBR 680 doing an interview with Rick Monday. And Rick, baseball. If you look at American history, you always can see what happened in America through the eyes of the baseball, through all the decades of history and when baseball coincided. You were a man of the 60s, and you were born in Arkansas, then went to California, but then you were at Arizona State. So now we're talking early 60s. A little turbulence in the country now. What was life like for you in those days as an athlete and just as a young man?
Well, I think all of us are obviously aware of what took place in Vietnam, and then what I signed professionally, which was 1965, out of Arizona State after we had won the national championship. In Omaha, I signed within the Kansas City A's. It was the first year of the draft, and I was the number one pick ever selected in that draft. So immediately, I'm happy and I'm joining professional baseball. And again, this is 1965. Well, at that time, the White House had put forward some referendums that if you were even married after midnight on such and such night, you were still going to be eligible for the draft for the Vietnam War. So it was suggested to myself and also to Dave Duncan, who was a catcher with the Kansas City A's at the time, before they had moved to Oakland, that, we were in the Northwest League. I had just signed as I'm 2 weeks into my professional career, and we went down and signed up for the United States Marine Corps Reserves. And in fact, we were in Eugene, Oregon, and did it. And right after that season ended, both Dave and I reported to San Diego, MCRD, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, and we went through boot camp, and that began a series of years for me, 6 years, of not only in the Marines, but also in Major League Baseball. So there was a period of time that Dave and I could go to 30-day active duty during the off season, and then they changed that. So there were about 4 years, four of the 6 years, that every month during the baseball season, regardless of where the A's were playing at that time, whether it be Kansas City or then eventually into Oakland, we would hop on a plane, fly back to the Oakland area, come back here to the Bay Area, and attend reserve meetings, and then there was this two-week summer camp. So it was very much on our minds because at one time we were on 24-hour call to be activated to go to Vietnam. So it's something with one eye, you're chasing your dream, really, from a professional standpoint. And the other standpoint, you're looking at your dream of being an American and representing your country. And if called, you would have answered the bell. And that's exactly what it was. So it was baseball and it was Marine Corps for six seasons.
Yeah. Did you have a draft number? I had a very low draft lottery number.
No, I never did have a draft number. We actually signed before there was a draft number even put on. It was just something that we felt strongly about. And oddly enough, is it at the time, Alvin Dark was the manager of then the Kansas City A's. And if you look back into it, Alvin was a major in the Marine Corps. So we actually pulled some strings to get into that unit at the time. We were since obviously transferred, but things were closing up. And as a favor to Alvin Dark and what he meant to the Marine Corps, they said, okay, we will open this up to a couple of more players that already had it the quota itself. But then you start to look around. It's not the first time that happened because you look at many of these players. I mean, from Ted Williams to Bob Kennedy to Jerry Coleman, who was my broadcast partner, rest his soul for a number of years in San Diego. They gave up their part of the careers. There's a lot of players all throughout the year. They put baseball to the side and they served our country.
Yeah. Well, that's how America and baseball coincide. Going through boot camp and things like that, did you keep in touch with the politics of the 60s like many people did with all the deaths and assassinations and all that?
No, when you're in boot camp, you don't keep track of anything except when reveille is and all of a sudden when you finally hit the rack at night. Oddly enough, is it during boot camp, I remember when Dave and I were told to get off the bus at MCRD and put our feet in the yellow footprints. Marines out there listening to this will know exactly what we're talking about. We were the first ones asked, I'll put it that way, to get off the bus because they knew we were both ball players. For the entirety of boot camp, I was given a baseball from one of my drill instructors. And at every assembly that we had, if there was another platoon coming by, I was called front and center, and I had to present my drill instructor with the baseball. It didn't matter if we were in physical training. It didn't matter if we were a chow. It did not matter if we were on the obstacle course. It didn't matter if we were in the rifle range. Whenever my name was called, I had to go front and center and make sure that I had the baseball, and the baseball better be clean.
I love it. Great story. Rick Monday with us. Now, you were on a team that had long hair and mustaches. And, of course, during the 60s and late 60s, when I did have that kind of hair, I did it too. How about you?
Well, when you're going to reserve meetings, it's not really accepted when you report your mustering and then falling into formation. No, that was not allowed. They looked at it very closely. And I've never had facial hair to begin with. And at times, right after the Marine Corps, you let it grow a little bit longer, if nothing else, out of, hey, I wonder if it actually can grow a little bit longer that particular time. It's kind of funny as I go back to when I had to carry the baseball around during boot camp. And for all these weeks and then for a couple of months, you're going through boot camp and presenting the baseball and everything else. I remember I was selected as honor man of our platoon. And I remember on graduation day, my drill instructor, again, right on the parade grounds in San Diego. This is on graduation day, and all the platoons are going through it, and very formally, you're in your dress blues as the honor man. He called me front and center again, so I snapped to attention, and I know that my drill is I have to pull out the baseball because I still had the baseball on graduation day in my right front pocket. Couldn't have it in my left front. It had to be in my right front. And I said, I have the ball, sir. And he goes, would you hand me the ball? Said, yes, sir, I hand him the ball. And he said, would you please sign it for me? And that's when I knew is that I kind of come full circle. And I saw a couple of my drill instructors a few years later at a baseball game, at a major league game. And they came and they saw me, and it was a very proud moment for me. And it still is when someone comes up and says, Semper Fi. It's a relationship that you're never a stranger if they served in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, boy, what a great story. I did 6 years of Army Reserve in a civil affairs unit, and I knew every summer I had to go for 2 weeks. I was a lawyer in those days, and 2 weeks I was going to Fort Stewart in Georgia, Fort Anniston, Fort McClellan in Anniston, Alabama, for tear gas training.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to go in that bungalow where you have the tear gas training too. But you know, Camp Pendleton, big Marine base. We covered almost every inch of it, unfortunately, during the training itself. But I look back upon it, and it was a great time. I'm very proud to have served our country.
Yeah. Well, that's a coincidence, the confluence of baseball and American history. Now, for you, it continued on, and you had the great moment in 76 with the flag incident in L.A., which, again, is a moment of the 70s and protests and flag burning, and you were there for that, too.
Well, it was something I reflect upon. It. We're doing this little chat, and it's the day after the anniversary of that took place many, many years ago. It's 41 years now. The nice thing is that after that day, and during the fourth inning, you know, if you're in your office or in your home or even in your workplace, you understand if something's out of kilter. Well, something got out of kilter in the bottom half of the fourth inning. Ted Sizemore was the batter for the Dodgers. I'm with the Cubs. It was the year before I was traded to the Dodgers. And I turned where the noise was coming from, and I was down the right field line. So from center field, I look over, actually down the left field line, and I looked over, and here comes these two guys. I saw something was under one of their arms, didn't know what it was, and then they spread it out, saw it was an American flag, and they began to douse it with lighter fluid. I saw the reflection of the can. It was a big can of lighter fluid. It was the industrial size. And it angered me. It angered me because that's the way I was brought up. You don't do that with the American flag. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. They're trying to ignite this thing. And I began to run at them. And the wind blew the first match out. There was a wonderful photo that was taken by the late James Rourke, who was working at the time for the Herald Examiner newspaper. He was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize and took that photo that I have a large copy of it very proudly in my home. And no one knew that anything other than the audio call of Vin Scully and the photo taken by James Rourke, nobody knew that anything else existed until 1984. Now, this took place in 76. And it was after 84 was my last year playing. It was that following winter I was in a meeting about doing the Dodger cable games. And as I came out, I met a gentleman that had been around the ballpark, and I met him through Tommy Lasorda. And he was the head of one of the movie studios. He goes, "Hey, I saw last night the video of you taking the flag away from the two protesters." And I said, "Well, you must mean the photo that James Rourke took." He goes, No. "My friend, who's with another studio, shot it on his own camera, 16-millimeter camera, is brand new. He happened to take it to the field." So I didn't even know it existed until 1984, and this gentleman messaged it over to my home that evening. That was my first look. But the long story short, when I took the flag away from those guys, I asked for the flag after the game. And I said, "Look, when you get through the court case," and they were fined $80 apiece and put on 2 years probation for private trespass, and that was what it was. And about a month later, the Dodgers came into Chicago, and the late Al Campanis, who was the general manager of the Dodgers, presented me with that flag. The point that I'm getting to, and the irony of the whole thing, is that very flag that they were trying to desecrate that particular afternoon, which to me is insulting to those that have served our country and allow all of us to have the rights and freedoms that we have. That flag has gone across the country and helped raise money for military charities and other charities we're involved with. And my wife Barbara Lee and I are very active about it. She's gone on one trip, went halfway. We live in Florida. She went from Florida to Los Angeles in a 14-day trip, 14 different cities, 14 different states, and took that flag and raised a great deal of funds for military. Now we're trying to organize one that will go nonstop across the entire country, too. So it's an awareness. And even though it was 41 years ago, I still get letters every week now from people that maybe were not born that heard about it. And people ask me from time to time, they say, "Well, does it bother you that you played 19 years in the major leagues? And you may be more well-known for one act, and that being taking the flag away from those two individuals." And my response has been, will always be, if that's all you're ever known for, standing up for what you believe is right is not a bad thing to be known for.
Yeah. Boy, that's a baseball in American history. Look at how it coincided in the 70s.
Well, it goes back even beyond then. I mean, you start to read in the history, I mean, during World War II, when night games were not advisable because we didn't know what was happening. You turn the lights off. There was a banishment of lights being turned on within a certain number of miles from the coast as well. And if you look at baseball also in our history, if you look back at 9/11, I really believe that the game of baseball, the integrity of the game of baseball and the people in it helped all of us to get over a very traumatic situation. And it is a game, but the symbolism of baseball and what it can mean to us. Because it's a game we all look at, and everybody believes that we understand how to play it. Well, it's played a little different level at the major league level than most of us or most of the people understand. But isn't it nice that this great game was a conduit, a band-aid, if you will, for all of us to kind of join hands and move forward?
Yeah. Well, look at President Roosevelt in 1941. After Pearl Harbor, they didn't know if they'd had baseball in 1942, and he wrote the famous green light letter that said, "We want baseball. We want the game to go on so people can go to the game."
Well, it's a great game, and it offers a great deal. And there have been some great, great players that have kind of hand in hand have not only played this great game, but they have been involved in the armed services of this great country at the same time.
Ever go on a USO trip?
Not a USO trip per se. There was an invitation, actually, 2 years ago to go to Afghanistan, but it was during the season, could not get away. We've been to a lot of different things. Been to USOs stateside, but not overseas. We're trying to work some things out on that end of it. And to take that flag. The flag doesn't belong to us. It belongs to everybody else.
Well, great to talk to you, Rick. This is good.
My pleasure.
Very good. All right. More coming up.